Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I think it's all set to go. So thank you, Sister Rebecca, for that wonderful introduction. Although I don't think Christy is type A, and she was in the group. So maybe there were a couple, well, maybe we were all type A then, and we've all kind of grown at that point. But suffice it to say, we were all really eager to know what God wanted us to do yesterday, and felt like he was taking his time to show us what to do. But so I'm here. Sister Dorsey asked me to speak about my experiences, specifically my experiences as a widow, as a young widow. I'm just going to start by quoting two scripture passages that I've always loved. Jeremiah 29:11. For I know well the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans for your welfare, not for woe, plans to give you a future full of hope. And Ephesians 3:20-21. Now to him who is able to accomplish far more than all we ask or imagine by the power at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus for all generations, forever and ever. Amen. I've always loved these passages, and 9 years ago, I could have quoted you these passages. I would have said that I believe them, and I would have meant it. But I wouldn't have really known what they meant deep down in my heart. I wouldn't have known what it means to stake your life on the truth in these passages, to hold on to these truths when all else fails, when there's nothing else to hold on to, when it seems like you've lost everything. I wouldn't have known what these passages meant. And then I met Peter. So I met Peter when he started, well, when his roommate started dating my best friend Rebecca, who's in the back. I actually found him really annoying at first. And kind of, you know, but didn't really pay much attention to him. He was just kind of over there. And then after a few years, I kind of started to notice him more, and I kind of started to suspect that, oh, I think he might be interested in me. But I didn't think he would ask me out. I figured he probably wouldn't. And after a while, after a couple of months of thinking, I think he might, I think, no, he's not, I think he might, no, he's not, he did finally ask me out. But this wasn't a typical situation where, you know, boy meets girl, asks her out, because Peter had been diagnosed with cancer. And this wasn't his first time dealing with cancer. He was diagnosed for the first time with a rare form of liver cancer when he was 16. Fibromyelar hepatocellular carcinoma, for those of you who are curious, it's a rare form of liver cancer that strikes teenagers, usually. And the only cure, really, is to remove it, because it's very resistant to chemo. And at the time, they found the tumor when he was 16, they removed 3/4 of his liver and did chemo. And after, you know, a long time, he recovered and he was fine until he was 20, when they found it again in a couple of lymph nodes near his liver. Since he'd had his lifetime dose of the one chemo that had been known to work, they did radiation instead at that time. And then he was fine until he was 28. And then they found 4 tumors. And those tumors were inoperable because the largest one was wrapped around his vena cava, which is the garden hose-sized vein that leads to your heart. And so removing the tumor would have killed him. So having had his lifetime dose of chemo, one particular kind of chemo, and also his lifetime dose of radiation, he was left with experimental treatments to try to treat these tumors. And understandably, he was a little reluctant to ask somebody out on a date, given that situation. But he did. And he was very surprised when I said yes. And after we had gone out a few times, I asked him, you know, Why did you wait so long to ask me out, and then why did you eventually ask me out? And he said, well, I didn't want to live in fear. And I figured you had a right to choose what you wanted to do. I couldn't choose for you. It needed to be your choice. And so we we began to date. But it was really not your typical dating relationship. Our first date was fine. No medical emergencies occurred. On our second date, we had to cut the date short because he had to go to the ER because he was having a reaction to the medicine that he was taking. Our third date actually took place in the hospital when I went to visit him because he was there receiving treatment. And at that point, I knew I had a decision to make. I was attached to Peter. I liked him. But I wasn't in love with him. And I could walk away relatively unscathed at that point. There wasn't, I could just go. I could just say, I don't really want to date anymore. I think I'm done. And I think we both would have been relatively unscathed. But I also knew that if I did that, it would be because I was afraid. I would be afraid of what would happen if I did fall in love. If I did fall in love with a man who was going to die. At least, well, we're all going to die, but he was going to die sooner than most of us are. At that point, the doctors had given him 3 to 5 years to live, and they didn't know if any of the treatments they were doing were going to work, and I didn't know. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I spent some time thinking and praying about it, and I decided, you know, if I spend my life trying to avoid suffering, I'm going to fail. Because we live in a fallen world. I mean, we all are going to suffer. And if I spend my life trying to protect myself, number one, I'm going to fail. But number two, I'm also going to miss out on so many opportunities for blessing because I'm so afraid of the other side. I'm so afraid of the suffering that could come with them. And I didn't want to live that way. I didn't want to live trying to protect myself instead of really embracing what God might have for me. So I decided to just go ahead and see where this relationship was going to lead. So we ended up dating, falling in love, and getting married. There were times when it seemed like a completely normal relationship and times when it was really clear that it was not. Peter actually proposed when he was in the hospital. I mean, it was, you know, there was a lot that went on in the short time that we dated and were engaged, but God was very present and very evident to us throughout that time as we moved towards marriage, and he blessed us. He blessed us in our marriage. And there's a lot that I could say about that time that we were married. But as I was praying about what God wanted me to share, because there's so much that could be shared, I felt like what he wanted me to talk about was not our marriage, not what we went through there, but what happened after he died. That was what he wanted me to share. So what happened was a few months after we were married, Peter started a new experimental treatment that actually seemed to be working. It was a targeted therapy that, not a chemo, it was a different kind of drug, but it seemed to be working. The tumors seemed to at least not be growing. And it seemed like at least we could get those 3 to 5 years. And then 9 months after we were married, he got a blood clot in his liver, and there was nothing they could do about it. It was just there. And they told us that his liver would slowly shut down, and he would die probably in 6 to 8 weeks. And we had some choices to make. They offered more treatment, but he decided he wanted to spend what time he had left at home with me, rather than in and out of hospitals, which is what would have happened if he'd had the treatment. And he actually lived longer than they thought. He lived for 12 weeks. And then he passed away. He died a few weeks before our first anniversary. Although we were married for a liturgical year. I do hold on to that. Because we got married the day before Pentecost, and he died the day before Pentecost. And in the eyes of heaven, we were married for a year. That means something to me. But the day The day he died, my heart broke. And the pain, both emotional and physical, was like nothing I had ever imagined. And although there were certainly difficulties in being married to someone who had a terminal illness, this was certainly when the hard part began. Because I had made a bold statement about trusting God when I chose to date and marry Peter, but I didn't really know what trusting God meant. And I didn't really know what kind of pain I was talking about. I mean, we never do, really, until it happens. And I had a lot to learn. I had a lot to learn. By the grace of God, I had followed God all my life, but my faith hadn't been truly tested. I mean, really tested. I never had a time when I rebelled and walked away. I never had a time when I didn't at least try to follow God with varying degrees of success. But I had never had a trial like this. Never had a trial on this scale. Nothing that involved this kind of excruciating pain. And I was driven to my knees. And I realized very early on that I had a choice. I could either put in the very hard work of grieving, or I could try to run away from it. And without God, without the hope that I had in him, even though he seemed so far away and that hope seemed so far away, I think I would have run. Shortly after Peter died, I went to a support group for young widows and widowers. I was desperate to talk to somebody who was in a similar situation to me, and I found a support group. I only went once. It wasn't really very helpful. But there was a woman there whose husband had been dead for 3 years, and the way that she had handled it was she had just not handled it. She had just tried to pretend nothing had happened and just tried to pick on with her life, and she didn't deal with the pain and she didn't deal with it. And 3 years later, she was in the support group finally trying to deal with it, and I didn't want that to be me. I didn't want that to be me. It seemed like what she was doing was she had a great big gaping wound that she just put a Band-Aid over. And it wasn't healing, and she was just trying to pretend that if she kept putting Band-Aids over it, it would be okay. But what really needed to be done was pull the Band-Aid off, scrape out everything in it, and allow healing. And I felt like that's what God was saying to me. I had a choice. I could be like that woman, or I could let him take me through this. I could walk through this with him. And I wanted to be healed. I wanted to be whole. It didn't seem possible at the time. But I asked God to do whatever it took to get me through it. I wanted him to clean out that wound. I wanted to be whole again. I knew I was a mess, but I held on to that passage from Ephesians, that God can do far more than all we ask or imagine, and that somewhere, sometime in the future, there was a future full of hope for me. Somewhere. And so began my journey of healing, my journey of surrender. And there was a lot of work that God needed to do with me in order to help me heal. You don't just grieve in isolation from your personality flaws. And they go with you. And the things that you struggle with on a daily basis make the grief harder because they're still there. And first and foremost, I needed to learn that I couldn't be self-sufficient. I needed to ask for help. And I don't like to ask for help. I really don't. I'm pretty good at getting things done. I'm pretty good at handling things. And I also am afraid that if I ask for help from people that they'll eventually get angry or not want to be around me. And it's really, really hard for me to admit that I can't do something and that I needed help. And I had to ask for help. Because there were days that I literally couldn't function, that it took all of my willpower to get out of bed and to do what needed to be done. But my family and friends were great for, I think I counted this up, for 6 weeks after Peter died. I never slept alone. There was somebody at the house with me. Although for 2 weeks of that, I was in Florence visiting Christy. But let it be said that I was visiting Christy and her husband and small daughter in a one-room apartment in Florence. She opened up her very, very small apartment to me. So I still wasn't sleeping alone. I was certainly not sleeping alone in that one-room apartment. Very, 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 very close. But my friends and family worked out of rotation, and I wasn't alone. People were with me. I wasn't alone on the holidays. Becky went on retreat for me over Thanksgiving. Sorry, Sister Rebecca. Went on retreat with me over Thanksgiving so that I wouldn't have to spend the holiday thinking about Peter. I mean, I still spent the holiday thinking about Peter, but that at least I would have somebody with me as I was doing that. In April, back there, she went to see the Grand Canyon with me over Christmas so that, you know, I could have something to look forward to instead of just a sad Christmas. You know, my parents, wise priests, friends who gave me counsel, it was amazing. Everybody who came around me to help me through this. Because I was also afraid that people would kind of say, well, you chose this. You knew he was going to die. Good luck. Which, of course, nobody did. Nobody did that. Everybody was there to help me. I had a wise therapist, very wise Catholic therapist, who walked with me through this. And when things got really rough for a while, you know, medication to help as well. Because I think I had this view that God was going to get me through, but it was going to be me and God. We were somehow going to do this. And, you know, that wasn't how it was going to happen. It was going to be God and 200 of my closest friends. I mean, that was really what it took. And, you know, Rebecca came over. She's back there with her daughter. She came over and she said, Amy, we have to set up a schedule. Because if you don't know what you're doing each day, you're going to go crazy. So let's just set up a schedule. So I would get up in the morning, I would look at that schedule. What did Rebecca say I'm supposed to be doing now? But I needed that. I needed something to hold on to. My sister-in-law kind of provided me with a dog, which was my reason to get out of bed in the mornings, because I didn't want to get out of bed, but I also didn't want to clean pee off the floor. So I got out of bed because the dog needed to be let out. So there was just so many ways that God provided me through the people around me. And as I grieved, as I struggled to get through each day, I really learned that what C.S. Lewis said is true, that God really shouts to us in our pain. And I would have days of just desolation, and then I would have days of these just blinding insights like I had never had before into the love of God and into his care for me. I was meeting with a priest one day, a priest who had walked with us, with me and Peter, through dating and marriage and Peter dying, and he said just kind of an off-head comment, well, you know, one of the things you can learn about Peter dying is, and I can't remember what it was that he said, but I just kind of lost it. And I was like, really? Peter died so I could learn a lesson? That's what this is about? And being a good priest, he kind of just said, well, no, Amy, I think let's calm down a little. I mean, because I kind of got angry about that. And I can't remember what it was that we talked about after that, but as I was driving home, I started thinking about that again, and I thought, well, did Peter die so I could learn a lesson? I don't think so. I mean, that's not the, can't be the only reason that he died. And then I just suddenly had this thought. But if God had gone to Peter and had said to him, Peter, Amy needs to learn something. And the absolute only way that she is going to learn it is if you die. Will you do it? He would have done it. He would have done it for me. He would have laid down his life for me. And it suddenly, I mean, I had no, in a sense, I had no problem accepting Peter's love for me in that way, but it suddenly hit me, that's what Jesus did. Like, I was suddenly able to see Jesus' death on the cross in a whole new light because of Peter's death in a way that I had never seen before. Another thing that happened was often I would feel not necessarily feel Peter's presence, but I would, you know, through the community of saints, we can pray to our loved ones that are in heaven, and I would pray and ask him for his help, and I would feel his care for me, not all the time, but sometimes, and I held on to that, just knowing that he was praying for me in heaven, that he was looking out for me, that Peter was there watching for me, and it suddenly struck me one day, I'm holding out for those times when I feel Peter praying for me, when I feel him taking care of me, and those, I'm striving for that, just, you know, yearning for those few moments a day where I feel like, oh, I think Peter's praying for me right now. But why don't I feel like that about God's presence? I was kind of thinking about that for a while, and I actually happened to be getting ready for bed at the time. This was a very odd situation. I've never had this happen before, but I was getting ready for bed, so I was getting undressed, and we're all women here, so I can, you know, although I don't know who's listening or watching. But anyway, so I'm getting undressed, and I was thinking about this, and I was like, Lord, why can't I feel your presence? Like, sometimes I feel like Peter is praying me. Why can't I feel you? And immediately, I just knew Jesus is standing right by me. He's just standing right by me. And all I could think was, I don't have any clothes on. And if I turn around, Jesus is going to see me, and I don't have any clothes on. And I thought, he sees me all the time. Why is that the first thought that leaps into my head, is that if I turn around, Jesus is going to see me without any clothes on. But I just knew Jesus was standing behind me. And I just heard him say to me, because you don't want me as much as you want Peter. And I just stood there. And I was like, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. Help me. Help me to want you as much as I want Peter. Help me to desire your presence as much as I desire his, and to miss you as much as I miss him. And which brought me to sort of another realization that God showed me, was that, you know, the disciples must have actually really missed Jesus. That hadn't really occurred to me before. Like, there wasn't much time between Good Friday and the resurrection to miss him, and they were probably so shell-shocked by what was going on that I'm sure missing Jesus wasn't really forefront on their mind. They were trying to figure out whether or not they were going to be killed next. There was a lot more going on, but certainly after the ascension, after he went back to heaven, he wasn't there anymore. And they must have really missed him. I mean, they lived with him. They knew what his favorite foods were, because I'm sure he had favorite foods. They knew what games he liked to play, because I'm sure they must have had some entertainment during the 3 years on the road. They knew, then they saw him take care of Mary. They knew how well he took care of Mary. They knew, you know, they knew what he looked like when he was tired, and they knew what he looked like when he was praying, and they knew him intimately, and he was gone, and they must have really missed him. And it just had never occurred to me before. I just, you know, well, he was gone, and they had the power of the Holy Spirit, and they moved on, and they evangelized, and I never had stopped to consider that they missed him. But then they had the gift of the Eucharist, and they could touch him again. They could touch him. And I can't touch Peter again. I can't touch him until I get to heaven. I can't touch him. But I can touch Jesus. And they can touch Jesus. And that just brought a whole new meaning to the Eucharist for me. I also really felt like I had an insight into just pain, not just kind of pain in general, or different pains, or just the pain that people have. I was kind of desperate to find somebody like me. Because most young widows, I was 33 when Peter died. And most young widows have children. And I didn't have any children. And that was really, really hard, that Peter and I weren't able to have any children. And I wanted to find somebody who was like me, somebody who could understand what it was like to be widowed, so young, and to not have any children. And I couldn't find anybody. I couldn't find anybody in real life. I couldn't find anyone. And out of desperation, I just typed into Google one day, I think widow, Catholic, childless, or something, just to see if something would come up. And I didn't find any childless Catholic widows. But what I did come across was this whole community of Catholic infertility blogs. I mean, this wide community of these women who are supporting each other through the cross of infertility. And so I became a huge blog stalker, and I would just read these women's blogs because they would just pour out their pain, which was different than mine, but I could really identify with a lot of what they were suffering through, of the pain of not having children with their husbands. And it really opened up to me the body of Christ and the suffering that we all have together. And there were just moments and moments like this, just over and over again. But there were also, I want to make clear, weeks of desolation. There would be these signposts where I would see something that would keep me going, and that would keep me picking up and getting up the next morning. And those of you who are here who walked with me through it know that there were so many days that there weren't these insights, that it was just merely getting up and trying to keep going. Because ultimately, I think what God was trying to reveal to me was that I needed to find the answer to all of my questions about grief, about Peter's death, in Jesus. And in trusting him even when I wanted to walk away. The priest that I walked with Peter and I through this told me shortly after Peter died, it was a challenge. A challenge to me. And believe me, I did not want to be challenged. I just said, don't challenge me. Just pat me on the back, comfort me, tell me I'm doing a great job. And he just was like, no, you need to be challenged. I know you. You need to be challenged. This is what you need. And what he told me was, you won't be satisfied with any answer other than Jesus. You can try to find meaning in Peter's death somewhere else. You can run a race in his memory, fundraise for a cure for cancer, write a book in an attempt to find a meaning to his death. But in the end, though, you will not be satisfied with any answer other than Jesus. And don't stop until you find that the answer to your question is Jesus. Not that he was saying those other things were bad, but if you're not ultimately finding the answer in Jesus, nothing is going to satisfy. The problem, though, was that I spent a lot of time being angry with Jesus. You see, I had made this decision for radical trust, but I felt like, God had kind of failed me. He provided for us in so many ways, but the one thing that I really wanted, he hadn't provided. He hadn't healed Peter. I realized that I needed to decide that either what I had believed all of my life was true or it wasn't. There's no middle ground. Either I could stake my life on the love of God or I couldn't. Either he's God or he's not. Either he's in charge or he's not. But he's not sometimes in charge and sometimes not in charge. Either he is or he's not. Which that meant that I had to accept Peter's death as part of God's will for my life. I needed to surrender my will for what I wanted to have happen with my life. For some reason, I had no problem accepting that Peter's death was God's will for Peter's life. I had no problem with that for some reason. I mean, I think maybe I should have, but I didn't. And maybe I just shouldn't think too deeply on that or I'll suddenly start having a problem with it. But I just didn't have a problem with it because he had been in pain. He was sick. And he was free from all that. He was in heaven. He was happy. He was whole. He was strong. But I was left behind. And I had a really hard time accepting Peter's death as God's will for my life. And I had to accept that for some reason that this was God's will for my life. And that Jeremiah 29:11 was still true despite the circumstances and that God still had a plan for me, not despite Peter's death, but really because of Peter's death. Because Peter's death was a part of that plan in a mysterious way. Not that God wills that anybody die. I mean, obviously, his plan is not for us to die. That's why it hurts. After Peter died, someone who I don't know and I don't remember their name, and they live, like, I think 3,000 miles away, sent me a letter saying, you know, I'm very sorry for your loss. It was in quotation marks. But we all know it's not really a loss because you'll see him again. And I promptly just threw that away. But I thought about it and said, yes, it's a loss. It is a loss. He's not here. I can't touch him. That's a loss. I can't touch him. I can't feel him. I can't speak to him. He's gone, and that's a loss. And you know what? That hurts because that's not the way it's supposed to be. That's not God's plan. But because of original sin, here we are. People die. And there's a mystery there. God's permissive will, God's active will. Books have been written about it. I'm not going to try to solve the mystery here. But what I do know is that from all eternity, God knew Peter was going to die. And from all eternity, he knew how he was going to use that in my life. That's what I know. And I had to accept that. And I had to accept that there was never going to be an answer to the question why. I'll never know why Peter died. I'll never know why Peter wasn't healed. And some other people are. I won't know why. On earth, there's hardly ever an answer to that question why. You know, I've thought about it long and hard. The Bible actually never promises us an answer to that question. You know, Romans 8:28 says all things work together for the good of those who love God, but it doesn't say, and I will tell you why everything happened. It just says that God can bring good out of it. Well, there's hardly ever an answer to that question, and I'll never know why. And I had to learn to accept that, and really, the answer to all of our whys is found in a manger in Bethlehem and a cross on Calvary. Because there's no generic God present there. There's Jesus, a crying, living, breathing, hurting, loving God who would rather die himself than see us die. He's the answer to our questions, and if we choose to not be satisfied with anything but him, we will find him. And that's what I discovered. Oh, how I wish I'd found out another way. I really do. But this is what God had for me. And I don't regret my decision. I don't regret my decision at all. I would do it again in a heartbeat. I would do it again. Because the gift that I received from being married to Peter and even from grieving for him, the gift that was, has been incomparable and has made me into the wife and the mother that I am today. So what does my life look like now? Well, I want to be clear, I'm still learning a lot of these lessons. I'm still really learning the joy of full surrender. I still have a bit of a tendency to be self-sufficient. I'm still learning how to trust in God. After I felt that I was able, with the grace of God, to accept Peter's death as God's will for my life, I felt like that was kind of the turning point in my grieving process. Not that everything was happy and I was totally fine after that, but I feel like that was a real clear turning point sort of in the path towards healing. And I had this image of me kneeling before Jesus and he was kind of stripping away all these layers, all the layers of myself. And my sense was that I needed to let Jesus kind of strip all these things away and build me back up into the woman that he wanted me to be right then. A woman who had experienced the pain of losing a husband. I could no longer be the woman that I was before I married Peter or during my marriage with Peter. I needed to let the Lord make me into the woman that he wanted me to be right then. And I think that's what I want to let him continue to do. I think that's what he's doing, stripping away what's not of him and building me into the woman that he wants me to be. And I still have a long way to go, as those of you who know me well can attest to. But I can say with confidence that he has a future full of hope for me and for you, and that by the power at work within us, he can accomplish immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine. Thank you. If it's okay, if there's time, I thought I'd open it up for questions and answers. If people had questions. Thank you. Yes. Oh, well. Well, about a year and a half after Peter died, I was taking classes at the seminary at Sacred Heart. Working towards my master's in theology, which I had been doing for a while. And I was actually taking one of my last classes. I was almost done. And I ended up in a class with Paul. And there was a very small class. There's only about five of us. And he noticed me. But he was too nervous to ask for my number. So he came up with this plan to write Christmas cards to everybody in the class at the end, because it was around Christmas. And then in my card, he asked me if I would go out to coffee with him. So we ended up going out for coffee, and I was completely like shocked, had no idea what was going on. I was like, oh, sure, okay. Had no idea. But I had actually... two priests that I had gone to confession to had both said to me, have you thought about dating again? I think you might be ready. And I had kind of just said, well, I don't know if I'm ready, but it's not like men are beating down the door, so it's kind of a moot point, and it kind of just moved on. And then Paul asked me out, and then we started dating. So, but it's interesting because I had kind of wondered, well, how am I going to know if I'm ready to start dating again? And I had kind of felt like, well, I guess when I'm fully healed, then I'll be ready to date again. And I realized that, at least for me, that wasn't the case. It was sort of, I was able to continue healing while dating Paul. Actually, dating him was very healing. I guess that's kind of all. I kind of know how to explain it, but he wasn't threatened at all by Peter, which was kind of, it was kind of wonderful. And so married and have two kids. But I mean, I want to be clear. I feel like I need to be clear that I don't look at it like, well, Peter died, so I can marry Paul, because it's not like, you know, well, I had to get Peter out of the way so she could marry Paul. I mean, that's not kind of how it works. And actually, one of the things that I desperately wanted when Paul and I were dating was I wanted Peter to meet Paul. It was like this weird situation. But obviously that can't happen, because if they can meet, then obviously I can't marry Paul because we're still alive. It's a weird marriage. I've heard it kind of compared to women who've had miscarriages, who have said, have had a miscarriage and then a few months later have gotten pregnant and have said, well, I wouldn't have the child I have now if I hadn't miscarried the other child. But that doesn't mean that I am glad I miscarried the other child. It's one of those things that you just can't quite reconcile. You just kind of have to go, well, Lord, I leave it to you. But I am very, yes, Paul and I are very happy, and Olivia and David Peter are very active. We'll leave it at that. No, they're great. They're great. I'm really, really blessed to have them.
You shared someone over to you who's not helpful.
Yes.
So, do you want to share anything that people said to you that weren't helpful, or just share the things that people said that helped you the most?
Yeah, probably one of the most helpful things that somebody said to me, Sister Ann said to me, actually, as she said, I have no idea what you're going through, but I want you to know I'll be with you while you go through it. And that, honestly, I think was the most helpful thing to say. You know, I have no idea what you're going through, but I'll be here with you while you go through it. And so that was incredibly helpful. I mean, I kind of reached the conclusion that most people at one point or another, were going to say something unhelpful. I mean, it's just the law of averages. Like, good things can't come out of your mouth all the time. But for the most part, people mean well, and they're really trying. And so, friends and family were great. I mean, really, for the most part. I mean, there were times, other things that were not helpful was, oh, I'm sorry for your loss, but it wasn't really a loss. I'm like, well, let me take your spouse away from you and see if you think that's a loss. So that wasn't helpful. Also, really, any sentence that begins with at least, probably whatever you're saying at the end of it isn't going to be helpful. So I got at least you didn't have any children, which I desperately wanted children with Peter. Or at least you're young and you'll get remarried. At least you'll be able to have children with somebody else. At least you know he's in heaven. I mean, that was comforting, but not at the time. I wanted him here. I didn't want him in heaven. I wanted him here. So really, anything that says at least, I would just stop. I would just, you know, if you feel yourself trying to say that, just stop talking. And, I mean, honestly, I've had people come to me and say, okay, you know, I'm going to this funeral, somebody's husband died, you know, what can I say? I don't know what to say. And my advice is always just say that. I don't know what to say. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'll be praying for you. And because really, honestly, at any given moment, who knows what they need to hear? But I mean, people who admitted to me that they had no idea what to say, but that they were, you know, that they weren't going anywhere. And I had a lot of friends who stuck with me through some really tough days. Really meant a lot. You know, I'm praying for you, or just getting an email or a phone message kind of out of nowhere saying, I was thinking of you today and I was praying for you. Or, you know, things like that just were incredibly, incredibly helpful. But, yeah, does that help? Yeah. Anything else? Okay.